like to think of myself as a storyteller, but I like to think of myself as a writer who writes with pictures. Essentially, my main avocation is storytelling. That's really what I do.
What did he think of you drawing funny books?
Well, it wasn't funny books at first. My initial interest was to be a painter, or a serious painter, and I wanted to write. And very early on, though, my interest in cartoons or comics seemed to blossom, and he was very proud of that. He thought that was really fine. I was the only one of his three children who demonstrated any artistic talent, so he was very encouraging. Actually, he was very much more encouraging than my mother, who was frightened at the idea of my becoming an artist. She thought it was actual economic disaster.
Which of the cartoonists when you were younger inspired you?
Oh, well, the early ones, of course, were Harriman, Crazy Cat, Popeye, the early Popeyes, and he was Seagar was a master at creating action from virtually immobile characters. Popeye never flew around like Spider-Man or Superman, but he did evoke a tremendous amount of action and energy. I learned a lot from those people, particularly Ehrman, who taught me a lot about stagecraft and what I call the connection between the writer and the reader, or the artist and the reader.
So you like a lot of brick throwing.
Well, it wasn't brick throwing. It was
I know.
The fact that he was able to create a scene and then change the scene while the conversation was going on and engage the reader in such a way that somehow you felt fulfilled at the end of the whole strip. He was really a great master. It took years for him to be recognized, but today he's regarded as one of the great masters of the period.
Well, you mentioned Seagar. I mean, the way you did the Spirit Daily has that kind of like some kind of humor like that.
Oh, yes. I was strongly influenced by it. Later on, I became very enamored and intrigued by Milton Caniff's ability to develop stories, and I learned a lot about storytelling in this medium from Caniff. Those were the three great, real great influences that you can find traces of in my work. I attribute those three men to the real strong influence on my career, my art.
Could it say Caniff brought you more realism? Because when you came after doing the Spirit section after the war, you had more realistic stories.
Well, the realistic stories that I engaged in after the war was a result of my maturity. It's hard to, for those people who follow comics, particularly comic strips, which go on for 40 or 50 years, one tends to forget that artists grow. They're human beings. They grow. They get older. They become more mature. And my 4 years in the Army had the effect of maturing me, as it did for many others who were in the Army. So when I came out of the war and came back to the Spirit, my interest was in human experience rather than the fantasy which drove the early Spirits.
So you wouldn't have a flying car anymore in the after the war.
That's right.
Now, are the comic strips that were your favorites as a kid, are they still your favorites as an adult?
Oh, yes. I have several collections of the Caniff books. I frequently go through them when I'm really, sometimes on a meeting lunch at my desk, I'll flip through them and just kind of reminisce. There was a magic about the early Terry and the Pirates that I will never forget. There are other strips that taught me a lot, or at least I based my career thinking on, was Tim Tyler's Luck, which was one of the early adventure strips, mm-hmm. One of the first real adventure strips. It was done by
Young.
Chick Young. Well, it was Lyman Young, actually. Yeah. Chick Young later on was his son. The Youngs are a dynasty now.
Tim Tyler's like had a lot of ghosters over the years. I mean, it wasn't really a regular guy doing it.
Layman
was one of the persons who did it afterwards.
There are some strips that lent themselves to being ghosted. Mm-hmm. Caniff's strip, Terry was unsuccessful when it was ghosted. or picked up by someone else. There are some strips that just cannot be ghosted. I heard you early in the segment talk about Sparky Schultz's statement that he didn't want the strip to continue. And he's very well advised, because I think somebody else doing the strip will probably not be able to capture the magic. It's the same thing that happened with Walt Kelly's Pogo. Two very, very competent guys continued it. The artwork was splendid, but it never really captured that kind of magic that he was able to infuse it with.
Well, same thing with the Spirit.
Well, that's true. As a matter of fact, the Spirit was a prime example of that phenomenon. I was unable to secure a ghost who could successfully carry on the kind of strip that that Spirit was always. And so it was one of the reasons why I had to ultimately abandon it. I tried it once with Wally Wood, and it just didn't work. It became Wally Wood in the newspaper editors. I remember one editor wrote to me and said, well, you know, if we wanted to hire Wally Wood, we'd have done so. We hired you, and, you know, you better continue it or drop it. Take your choice.
It would seem like the funniest thing, like during the war years, you had very competent artists doing the strip with Jack Cole and Lo Fine. The writing wasn't exactly in your style.
No.
And then after the war, you didn't have artists that were really there, but you had Pfeiffer doing the stories for you.
It evolved. The Spirit was run pretty much like a football team. I called the plays, I created the plays, and so forth. But Pfeiffer grew in the shop. He started in the shop as a ghost, as a studio boy, if you will. And suddenly I discovered he could ride balloons like nobody could ride me. And so he began to take over. Ultimately, the way we did the story was that I would talk a story out with Jules, and he would go ahead and continue writing it. He writing in our shop was never done with a typewriter. It was always done with little stick figures.